Welcome into another episode of the NHL at the Rink podcast. Sean, there's a lot going on. It's Thanksgiving week. This is always a big week. Everybody's staring at the standings on Thanksgiving week and trying to analyze it. Can we start staring at the Minnesota Wild right now? I mean, I'm staring at them in the standings, third place in the Central Division. They've won five in a row with a rookie goalie in net who's dominating the NHL right now.
Yeah, they're a great story. And you know, a lot of people do put weight on the standings at American Thanksgiving. Oh, if you're not within 4 points or whatever that magic number is of, you know, the playoffs at Thanksgiving, you're not going to be a factor. I don't buy that. And I especially don't buy it this year. I mean, you look at the standings this year with all the overtime games we've had and shootouts and everything's bunched up. I mean, there's probably three teams that you're like, oh, I don't think they have a way. And even them, you're like, well, they could have a way. You know, we're going to talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning a little bit later, and they were not very good at the beginning of the year, and now they sit in first place in their division. So, you know, the league this year is a five-game winning streak away from being relevant, and that's what Minnesota's done, right? They figured it out in a very tough division that maybe got a little bit easier with Winnipeg and Connor Hellebuyck being out for 4 to 6 weeks while he has his knee taken care of. You know, it's their opportunity right now to make hay. I don't think they're going to make hay on the Colorado Avalanche, who never lose. But Minnesota's looked like the team that I think a lot of people thought they were going to look like this year after getting to the playoffs last year and looking like they had some pieces that would make them relevant. I don't know if Jesper Wallstat was the piece that would make them relevant, but he certainly has been.
Well, yeah, certainly the Avalanche never lose. We talked to Scott Wedgwood last week. He was terrific on that. He remains terrific. This week, by the way, we got Matthew Darche, the New York Islanders general manager, another team that's just, you know, played well over the last couple of weeks, and bang, there here they are in a playoff spot as we approach Thanksgiving this week. And it is that. What you just said is 100%. It's too tight. In fact, you know, at Madison Square Garden Monday night, we're recording this Tuesday, at Madison Square Garden on Monday night after the Rangers won against the St. Louis Blues, you know, Vincent Trocheck even pointed out, he goes, it feels like every time you win, you win a couple in a row, all of a sudden, bang, you're up the standings. You lose a couple in a row, all of a sudden you look and you're like, oh my God, we're dead last. It is just that, basically, this year. It is that close. But, you know, the Wild in particular, they are that team. But Jesper Wallstedt, 3 shutouts in the past 4 games that he's played since November 9th. He's got 6-0-2 record. You know, some stats on him, Sean, as you know, 23 years old. He's the 4th youngest in NHL history with a season-opening point streak of at least 8 games at 6-0-2. It's remarkable. He's 9.35 save percentage, 194 goals against average. And I'm gonna point this out. He's outplaying Filip Gustavsson, right now. That's a Swedish goalie. He's outplaying Linus Ullmark. He's outplaying Jacob Markstrom. Yes, it's November 25th as we record this, and he's played 8 games. The other guys have played double that, pretty much. But he's playing his way onto that Swedish Olympic team. He's outplaying the 3 favorites for you know, in net right now, and he's doing it for a Wild team that's playing well and getting buoyed by just this terrific goaltending. It's a great story. And I want to take it a little bit further after, you know, we'll let you comment on what I just said about the Sweden Olympic team. But look at the rookie goalies in the league. He's one of many.
Yeah, well, first of all, let's deal with the Olympic question. You know, all those other guys are veteran guys. And I think the Swedish team management knows what they can deliver. Markstrom has not been good. He was good last night. He played the Red Wings. He was phenomenal. Double pad stacking like Marty Brodeur. He was all over the place. That third period, it was like Denny Lemieux from Slapshot. Trade me right now. It was crazy. That Detroit team flies around, man. But certainly Wallstat's making it difficult, right? And you know, you kind of look at it, and these are hard decisions because you have to weigh resume versus in the moment. The biggest thing you can do in the Olympics is catch a hot goalie. Let's remember the first time that the NHL went to the Olympics. Canada, the US, the Swedes, the big boys, Who won?
The Czechs.
The Czechs. And they won because Dominik Hasek was out of his tree.
Yeah.
Completely out of his mind. So if you could catch a hot goaltender in the playoffs, I mean in the Olympics, you ride him. So I definitely think he's playing his way on. Does he start? I don't know. But if things don't go the way the Swedes want, he's your fix-it right now.
Well, 100%. He's been that good. And I did bring up the rookie goaltender. So let's dive into that because he's just one of a few, right? And we're going to talk about our trophy trackers at the quarter mark of the season. We passed the quarter mark last week, but we're running our trophy trackers on NHL.com this week for the Calder, the Vezina, the Jack Adams, the Norris, and the Hart. And we're going to get into that after we talk to Matthew Darche. But just look at some of these rookie goalies, because Wallstedt's not alone. He's been terrific, 6-0-2, a 194 save percentage, and a 935 save percentage. Just out of this world good. Yaroslav Askarov has been terrific for the San Jose Sharks. You know, a 913 save percentage right now and a 283 goals against. He's played the bulk of the games, too. He's played 13 or 14 games. Jacob Dobish for the Montreal Canadiens, he's been pretty good. Artur Seelovs for the Pittsburgh Penguins, he's been. This is like almost like the year of the rookie goalie right now. And it's Askarov and Wallstedt in particular are two that we have heard a lot about, right? And kind of been waiting for them to take that step, graduate through the American Hockey League, take this step now. And we're seeing that, and we're seeing in, you know, them doing it on teams that, you know, the Wild are pretty much where I think a lot of people expected them to be. The Sharks probably are not, a little bit better than people expected them to be, but they're doing it on teams that are up and coming here. And it is an interesting thing, because last year, remember, we had Dustin Wolf, and he was like the guy, right? The rookie goalie. And now there's a bunch of these rookie goalies who are coming up, and Askarov and Wallstedt are challenging, if you will, Matthew Schaefer right now and Ivan Demidov right now for, you know, in that Calder race.
For sure. And I think Askarov's been a great story, and we're going to talk about the Predators in a little bit. But, you know, and he was with the Predators before he got traded because they couldn't have both him and Saros, and they made a decision. And for a while, it looked like that the Predators had made the right decision. Askarov struggled after he got traded. You know, he stayed in the minors, which was probably a good thing for him. He came up this year, and he was not good. His first five starts, he was only over 900 in one of them. Save percentage. And you started looking and you started saying, uh-oh, you know, is playing for a not very good team getting to this guy, you know, because he was so good in the AHL in Milwaukee, he was out of his mind. And then since then, you know, something's happened. He's found his game and he's been lights out. You know, if you take out those first five games, he's among the best goalies in the league.
Well, yeah. He absolutely has been, but that was the expectation, and I understand. And you know, we can get into the Predators now. I understand that they went with Saros. I get that, but the expectation was that Askarov was going to be this guy. You know, like he was going to be this elite goalie. That's what the pedigree that he had, and he is becoming that now. Whereas now, let's flip it. We talked about the Minnesota Wild. That's the positive, you know, in the Central Division. And now there's been a lot of noise around the Nashville Predators. Barry Trotz is being very outspoken. Their general manager was slamming the table, apparently, in an interview he did with the Tennessean, either Sunday or Monday. I can't remember exactly when. And they wrote about it and using some choice words as well and staunchly defending his coach, Andrew Brunette, and we can get into that a little bit, but they are the other side of it in a Central Division that's got a great story right now going with the Wild. The Avalanche have just been, you know, I mean, they've been outstanding. They've been excellent. Best team in the league by far, whereas the Nashville Predators are 6-12-4. They just lost 8-3 to the Florida Panthers. This after their general manager called them out, said, I need blank more from everybody. They gave up a goal 11 seconds into the game. They lost 8-3 at home to the Florida Panthers just after that came out. So what do we make of that?
Are we doing ad libs, Dan?
Sure.
Mad Libs?
Mad Libs?
Do we fill in the – do we guess what the blank was?
Yeah, well, you can guess what the blank was. This is a family-friendly podcast, Sean. I don't think that you need to – you can guess all you want. Just keep it on, keep it to yourself.
All right, we'll skip that part. But look, I thought when they went to Sweden, which was a week and a half ago, that they needed to do something there for everything to stay status quo. And then they have that great comeback in the first game, and they win 2-1 against the Penguins. And then they lose 3-0 in the second game. And then they come home, and they get shut out again. And then they lose 8-3. Like, you can defend Andrew Brunette all you want, but something has to change, right? And how many times have we sat here and said, you can't trade 15 players? You have to change something else. There's a lot of coaches in this league that have been unjustly removed from their position because of the failure of their players. The season's getting away from them. Like, they're one of those teams we talked about that you don't really see a way out for them. They're having trouble scoring. They have 3 goals in their last 3 games. They're having trouble defending. You know, I don't think UC Soros is this bad a goalie, but the numbers are what the numbers are. He's at 889 for a save percentage. I could never – I'm the biggest Saros goal guy in the league. I could never see that. And now, you know, we talked about it with Wallstad a minute ago. Finland's got some goaltending questions that they have to figure out as the season goes on, because if this is this Saros is the goalie that Finland's getting, they're not going to be competitive.
Yeah, but you could have Dominik Hasek playing for the Czechs in the Olympics – the way he was playing, if they're going to play the way they played against the Panthers, he's got no shot too, right? I mean, like, that's the thing, is they are not playing well at all in pretty much any facet. Last year they scored 2.59 goals per game. That was 30th in the league. This year they're at 2.32. That's last in the league. And I get what Barry Trotz is saying. Barry Trotz was that coach. Right? For years in Nashville, David Poile, there were opportunities over those however many years he was there. Now, Trotz was a terrific coach. We know that. But there were opportunities like, okay, well, can't trade 15 guys. Got to fire the coach. David Poile never did that. Right? Never did it. Right? So that's what Barry Trotz grew up with in this league. He was that guy who stayed in his job for a long time, and the GM had faith in him, and the GM said, coach through it. We're going to coach through this. That's where he's coming from. So I understand what he's doing in staunchly defending Andrew Brunette, but the more times a GM staunchly defends the coach, doesn't that make you question, like, if he has to continue to defend the coach, like, doesn't it eventually lead to where we all expect it to lead?
Well, yeah, and that's part of the problem. But I also don't think that your case is 100% correct. Barry Trotz was almost always competitive. No matter what iteration of the roster he had, whether it was an expansion roster full of cast-offs and never had Bens and hope to be's, or as they grew into a team, the one thing the Nashville Predators always did is they made you pay. You were going to get 2 points from them, but you were going to walk out of that building and say, wow, we worked. We went hard. That was not an easy 2 points. I'm glad I don't have to come into Nashville again for a long time. I'm glad we only do it once or twice a year, because that's hard. They're not hard. And I don't mean physically, I don't mean fighting, I don't mean any of that. I mean tough. It's tough to take 2 points from them. You're going to give up 2 points, but it's not going to be easy and it's not going to be pleasant. And I firmly believe that any knowledgeable hockey fan can accept that. They can look at their roster and say, we can't compete with Colorado, we can't compete with Dallas, we can't compete with Winnipeg. I don't know what our path is, but I want to see my guys compete. And I don't know that that's happening every day.
Well, it's not. I mean, listen, I just remember when they came into Madison Square Garden, the Rangers hadn't had a home win, right? They were happy to see the Nashville Predators walk into the Garden, right? Like that wasn't a, it was like, oh, all right, tonight's our get right night at home, right? Same. That's a problem. That's a big time problem. But listen, they have issues that go well beyond the coach. And Barry Trotz talked about that in his interview with the Tennessean. He talked about the issues that go well beyond. They're not scoring. They got guys who can score. They have a lot of top six forwards who are not scoring. So at what point do they then say, this is not working? And I think it's within the it's in the next month, right? Like, this is not working. We are not turning this around. We need to change course. And can they move guys like Stamkos and or Marchessault, Forsberg, right? I mean, these are guys who are signed. Ryan O'Reilly is not. I mean, he's at the end of his contract. Like, is that where this is going for the Predators, that you're going to be looking at it and saying, some of these big names, like, we have to reverse course here, and some of these guys have to be traded? And I would imagine there's a market, right, for them, but it's not a trade the Predators are going to, quote-unquote, win, right? They invested in these guys and invested big money in these guys, and it's not working, and now you're going to have to trade them for pennies on the dollar, essentially, based on how things have gone. And it's not, as I'm not saying Stamkos is a pennies on the dollar player. It's just that what has been happening in Nashville makes it so in the real market. And then he can go wherever he goes next and become a 40 goal scorer again. Like, that's the way it goes sometimes. But if we talk about the coach, and maybe it comes to that, maybe it doesn't, I don't know, but this goes well beyond that, and they're going to have to make some significant decisions here if things don't change for them over the course of the next month or so. Because if they don't, now you're looking at a season and a half worth of it, right? And that's a big enough sample size to say this mix ain't working.
Well, we're going to talk to a GM in a minute, and before we get to Matthew Darche, I want to make 2 points. You say that the Nashville Predators have a lot of top six forwards. What they don't have is a lot of top six centermen.
No. They don't. They got a lot of wingers. So, they may not have one top six centerman.
So it's really hard to score when you don't have a distributor. And two, is it Andrew Burnett's calling card? Offensive creation?
Yep.
Isn't that why he was made a head coach in the league?
But wasn't he creative offensively, especially as an assistant with the New Jersey Devils, with Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier as his centers?
That's what I'm saying. It's all tied together. I think this team is fatally flawed, and they haven't had Roman Josi for a lot of it, which also hurts because that's a lot of generation from the back line. The hairs on the back of my neck went up when you said, do they move Philip Forsberg? You don't do that.
Okay.
That guy is Nashville. He loves it there. They love him. It's not his fault they are where they are. Like, I think that's the bridge too far. I think, you know, a lot of things have to be on the table. I think the fans in Nashville would be like, a lot of things are on the table. I think moving Forsberg would make things worse, not better.
I'm not going to disagree with you. I'm just saying it's all got to be on the table with the way things are going for them, because it's not just this season now. It's going all the way back to the start of last season when they went in with so many. Remember, they won the offseason in 2024, right? They won the offseason, and they have been one of the bottom teams in the league ever since. So it's all on the table. But you brought it up. We got Matthew Darche. He's got – it's a far more positive story going on with the New York Islanders right now with what they have with Matthew Schaefer. They certainly look like they hit a home run with him, and Darche is – you know, in a great spot here in his first year as a general manager. So let's get to that interview with the New York Islanders general manager, Matthew Darche. Matthew, thanks so much for joining us. So how's the first year been as a general manager for you? And what are you learning? What do you take from the first quarter of the season?
Well, it's been good. It's been busy, but I enjoy being busy, obviously, from when I got named in late May. A lot of things rattled off after that, from the combine to the draft to free agency through a big trade. And then there was some downtime in August. I was able to spend time with my family to get a little trip. And then the season starts, and it's a lot of evaluation from on my end, on players, on staff, on everything around the organization, trying to make it better. And I think I'm fairly happy with the start of our season. We started slow, but especially the last 2-3 weeks, I feel we've gone and played some really good games. We had an outstanding road trip, but we all know in this business, things change pretty quick. So you can't just sit on it. Oh, we had a great trip, or oh, we're in a good stretch. Because if you think things are just going to come without showing up, that's when you get surprised. So we have to stay on task. And so far, we've had a decent start of the season.
Matthew, obviously, with walking into this job, you had a pretty good idea of what the organization was and what they had and what they were about. What's been the biggest surprise for you so far? So, you know, you talked about being in charge and evaluating. What's kind of jumped out at you as maybe something you didn't expect?
I don't know if there's anything I didn't expect. Obviously, the players, as much... Well, I realized, and even when I was in Tampa, and you read what people think of your players, and you're like, well, it's not quite that. Sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse. And even if obviously I did my due diligence, I've prepared for this and the players. But once you start knowing the personalities, and that's why I said you keep evaluating, because you once you're inside and you know all the details behind the scenes, you can make a better judgment on players, on staff, or anything like that. So not necessarily a surprise because we saw it, but it might be superficial. But I think the facilities here have been actually outstanding, from the practice facility to the UBS Arena. You know, like when you're talking, you see those college football teams now, they attract players with unbelievable facilities. And I think that's one thing we have going for us here. Like, we're in an awesome market. I always tell people, like, where I live, I'm in New York, but I got room around me because I'm on Long Island. So I'm that close to the city, but I'm not in the city, in the hustle and bustle of the city. So I think it's a very desirable location for players, for location-wise, travel. Ownership is outstanding. They give me the resources I need to do my job, which is a big part of it. Great arena, great practice facility. So I think there's a lot going for the Islanders.
Well, listen, and one of those great things going for the Islanders is the home run you hit with Matthew Schaefer. You pick him number one, and I'm curious, for the first quarter of this season, how has his success and his production and what he's been able to do at such a young age changed your thoughts on your team, impacted, you know, what business could be like for you this year?
That's a great point. What he's doing right now is a barely 18-year-old. Remember, he was 10 days from being in next year's draft. He turned 18 September 5th, which is very impressive. And it's funny because all summer I kept telling his agent, you know what, let's stay open-minded here. They only played 17 games last year. There's still the option of going back junior is still there. From the start, my mind was, let's bring him to camp. He's going to play preseason games. He's going to play at the start of the season. We'll evaluate from there. But let's just say after, I think, game 6 or 7, I called his junior GM to tell him he wasn't going back. He didn't sound too surprised, you know. So my biggest surprise with Matthew, a lot of times you see the young kids coming, they have all the offense, right? They have the swag, they have the skill. And then, but then in their zone, or not only the defense, people think defensively is only in your D zone. No, it's how you take the rush and decisions you make at the offensive blue line, decisions you make in the neutral zone. That's what's impressed me the most, is how well he can defend, which is extremely impressive for that age. Never mind a 19, 20, 20-year-old, a first-year defenseman, regardless of the age and how he's played. He's changed our team by being here. And I've talked to a couple of our veteran Ds, and they said, yeah, we're moving the puck too. We're skating with the puck. We see what Matthew does. It looks like fun. So let's try it ourselves. So he's been, and you know, the main thing too, outside of the player, he's an outstanding young man. Our players absolutely love him because he's very humble with all the attention and the success he's getting. He's actually, I've played with players that, you know, they might have a big personality, but sometimes it rubs off the wrong way with the veterans. That there's none of that with Matthew. He's very humble, and he brings enthusiasm to our team. So we've been very happy with him. It's only 22 games into his career. But what he's done so far is extremely impressive.
And you evaluate players for that. That's what your job is. Where do you see his ceiling?
Is there a ceiling? I don't know. I see him as again, I'm being careful here not to oversell him, but I think the sky's the limit with his potential because he's already pretty close to the sky, the way he's playing. So I think he's got everything to be a extremely impactful franchise defenseman because that's how good he is.
And also his living situation. He's living with Matt Martin, and Matt Martin is a longtime Islander. He's a fixture, within the organization and in the community. I wonder the impact that makes on a player like Matthew and the professionalism that he is developing and has shown already, but is continuing to developing. Why does that fit?
Well, first of all, many players offered to take him in. Like over the summer, like I had some players, some of my veteran players calling me and said, "Hey, it's my turn to give back, and I'd like to take him in." I kept saying, "Well, let's see how he is in training camp. Let's see how he is." And then when Matt, who I hired to be a special assistant to the GM, he's been involved. I got him involved with everything in the organization. He's from the community because initially, obviously, you can't force a player to live with someone. The player has to want to do it. But when I was talking with the agent, with a player that just turned 18, I think it was best for him instead of living alone in New York as a barely 18-year-old player. So when Matt offered, obviously they have the same agent and Pat Morris, so there was kind of some familiarity there. And he goes back to a home. They have kids. He lives with a family. He's still a kid. That's basically, he's a kid. He can't even have a beer. Up until 2 months ago, he couldn't even have a beer in Quebec. So that tells you how young he is. So it's been great. And the only caveat that I think Matt will say is that the kid dips into his closet too often. We were on the road. Matt didn't come on the road trip, and he was going to an event, and he was looking for a certain sweater. And then his wife said, "Oh, yeah, I packed it with Matthew's clothes when you guys went 2 weeks on the road." So he's looking for his clothes in his closet because he doesn't have to go shopping. He just goes into Matt's closet, which is someday he comes in the morning. He comes and sees me. "Look, I've got this for Matt today," and he enjoys. He saves money like that, I guess. He just has to use his clothes.
That is a good way to save money. So let's go from young to older. Now, I'm not going to say old, but Bo Horvat's having a fantastic year. What do you attribute it to?
Bo has been, I mean, I think he's found some great chemistry with Emil Heinemann, but Bo's the type of guy that he'll bring a lot of offense. He plays well defensively. You see, he's plus 14, 15 last I checked. So, we always try to tell a player, good defense brings you good offense. They think, you're full of it. But the reality is, it's true. So that's what Bo does. He plays tough matchups. When we're at home, he plays a lot of times against the top players on the other side. He's just a, he's 60 something percent on faceoff. So he wins. He starts with the puck and he's got an elite shot. And right now he's really playing the right way and he's driving our team offensively. We started him with Emil Heinemann and Jonathan Drouin, who's been great too. They've had great chemistry. And at one point, just to get other lines going, we moved Joe off the line. But him and Emil as Heinemann have really got some great chemistry. And even last game, he doesn't end up with a point on the in his stats, but he scored that. He has to score, else we lose the game in a shootout. He goes in and he scores a great goal, and then Palmieri comes after and we win the game. So he's been clutch for us and outstanding leader. So I've been extremely happy. You mentioned earlier someone that surprised me. I always thought he was a good player, but now being here, seeing him every day, I see he's even more of a complete player. Like he can, you put him on All-Star team or Team Canada or teams like that. He can play up and down the lineup. He can play on the wing and play center. He wins face-off, PK, power play. So he's very versatile, which is great for our team.
That's why he's on the Olympic radar right now, no question about it, in the season he's having. The other one I wanted to ask you about was Jonathan Drouin, because it's been an up and down career for Drouin, but it just seems like he's comfortable. Like he's found a comfort level. He knows who he is. He knows what he is as a player. Are you guys getting Jonathan Drouin at a time where there's predictability for who he is and what he is, and the benefit of what is the benefit of that?
Well, you're 100% right. Like last year, when we went to Colorado, he kind of got his career going again. He had a tough time at the end in Montreal, which is can be a tough market sometimes. And he, you know, he, we offered him a contract. I'm sure he had other offers, and he chose to come with us. And he's been, you know what surprised me the most, I remember, because obviously when I retired, I did some TV in Montreal, so I watch a lot of games, is how good he is on both sides of the puck now. Like he used to be known only as an offensive player, and actually he told me he credits a lot, he gives a lot of credit to the Avalanche, the way, you know, they've won a cup. Unfortunately, I was on the other side of that one with Tampa when they won, but he's won a cup, and he's those he hasn't, I mean, Colorado's won a cup, and they see. So he understood how to play. It doesn't matter who you are, how you have to play both ways. And he keeps telling me, like, I've learned a lot in Colorado, and it translated here. Even now, after practice, I see him a lot. He has a little relationship with Kalen Richey from Colorado. He stays on the ice with him. He's been a great veteran. He's been great at both sides of the ice. Honestly, he's been snake bitten because he should have way more goals. He's had great opportunities. And when I brought him in this summer, I wanted to bring some skill. Play with more pace, play with more speed, and Joe fitted that bill, and we've been very happy with him.
You know, we mentioned with Horvat that he's on the Olympic radar. I'm curious, other than the condensed schedule, have you felt other ways that the Olympics have kind of impacted the season? Like whether it's players, you know, feeling a little bit of that weight or trying to force their way on or what it might be?
Well, I'm sure every player wants to be. I mean, any player would want to represent their country, and in Canada for sure. So, does it play into somehow some guys are playing? Maybe, but I think historically, Bo's been great every year. Maybe the style of play we're playing now fits his game. That's why he has more points than he usually has. But the schedule is definitely like right now until December 14th, we play every second day, and we have a back to back in there. We just came back from 7 straight days on the road where we had a back to back, and so the schedule impacts. And I'll knock on wood, outside of the Romanov, we've been fairly lucky with injuries. But yeah, I'm sure the Olympics for some guys, it's. But you know what? Even once a team is named, and some players that would wish they would be on, they're not on. I don't think their play is necessarily going to drop off, because now you have those events every 2 years, right? Like you'll have the World Cup in 28, and then the Olympics again in 30. So guys, would they want to leave a good impression regardless? And let's face it, they all want to make the playoffs. We want to make the playoffs, so that's the big incentive.
I wanted to ask you something about yourself. I mean, you came from Tampa, where you were working with and under Julien Brisebois. What did you learn from Julien that you've brought to the Islanders?
I think it's process, like the thinking process going. Like people ask me, were you overwhelmed when you took this job at the start? And I've been very, very fortunate. I'm the first one to admit that I'm lucky with that. That when I came in, a lot of times as an assistant GM, you do one thing or another. You know that you, and I've been very, very fortunate that Julien had me involved in every single aspect of hockey operations. So I was with him. Like he always joked that he called me his chief of staff. You know, so I was involved in every part of the hockey operation. So when I came in, I knew everything that had to be done, but especially where I felt that my learnings from him helped me the most is when I went through that trade in June, is to take the emotions out, first of all, and what I want to do as far as contracts. And after that, like whatever offers I had, how to break them down and how to analyze every one of them and take a step back and look at it, like for contracts, for prospects, for who do we think can fit in lineup, all that process going through a trade, because we've done a lot of trades when I was in Tampa. That's what really helped me. And to be confident in the process that I, even if it was a big trade, I was never nervous doing it, because I just felt, and doesn't mean I will, at the end of the day, maybe it will end up being a great trade, maybe it'll end up being a okay trade, who knows? Because when you're drafting draft picks, you never know. But I felt really confident the whole way. First of all, I had good people around me that helped me go through it. But just analyzing everything that comes with a trade, that's what I've learned from him. And then make rational decision and not emotional decisions.
Patrick Waugh's been in your orbit most of your life, right? Like you grew up in Canada. He was a star player. Now you're working together. I'm curious what your expectations were and kind of how they've played out.
Well, first of all, everybody thought I knew Patrick because we're both French Canadian and I grew up in Montreal. But Outside of last year in Tampa, when he was walking towards his team bus and I was walking to my car, and I obviously know who he was. And because I played for Montreal and I was in the media a bit, of course he knew who I was, but we chatted for 5 minutes. And when I got named, that's the first day I got his number, his phone number. And I got named on the Friday. I called him, and Sunday we met in Montreal for 5 hours. I had to decide, all right, what do I do with the head coach? And Patrick had a contract. I went to Montreal. I spent 5 hours with him. And when I left, I felt really comfortable. I wanted to work with him. I did my due diligence. I've called, teams that he's worked for, players that he's coached, just to get there, because I don't know him personally. I know, of course, I know who he is. I remember 86. I remember 93 in Montreal, and I remember the trade and that game against Detroit and all that, So, and people, like, it's funny because the impression even that I got, Patrick's a lot more humble than people think he is. Like, that's even if you think, oh, Patrick, it's his way or the highway. Not at all. The collaboration has been outstanding. We're on the same page on how we want to play. We're on the same page on messaging, on accountability with the players. So it's been great so far. We talk every day. So I've been extremely happy. He's done a great job, and it's been great working with him.
I did want to ask you because I was spent some time with our colleague, Jay, Sean and I's colleague, JF Chaumont, who you just recently spent some time with. And he told me you got to ask Matthew about the text messages he gets from his mother after games. So what does your mother tell you after Islander games?
Well, it's funny because, I mean, you saw in the article, my father passed away about a year and a half ago. So, even when I went through a couple other interviews, I never wanted to talk about it. The only people that knew was me, my wife, Julian, and probably Jeff Vinnick in Tampa. But my dad knew I didn't want to talk about it. So he would Google everything, what they would say about me, what were the rumors. And obviously, when I got named, probably 8 months after he passed away, and he watches every game, he would have been here for the press conference. And I said, and my mom's 79 years old. She were out west. I forgot if it was Vegas or Utah. I think it was Utah. The game ends, and she always texts me, even when we're 0-3 at the start. She texts me, "Are you okay?" I said, "Yeah, mom, it's all good. It comes with the job." And then she says, "Great win. Your dad would say you took too many penalties tonight, So, because I think that night we gave up six power plays or something. So even at her age now, she watches every game, even when we're on the West Coast, and she always sends me a little note after the game. So it's nice.
That's awesome, Matthew. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us, and good luck with the rest of the season and happy American Thanksgiving.
Well, thank you very much. Same to you guys.
Great stuff there from Matthew Darche. And listen, his team has been very good, surprisingly, I would say. I don't know that everybody had the Islanders come Thanksgiving week in a playoff spot, but there they are in a playoff spot. So good for them. But listen, I mean, the home run that Matthew Schaefer is just, it's an incredible thing. This guy just turned 18 years old. He's barely 18 years old. And Sean, we're doing trophy trackers this week. Before the interview with Darche, we talked about the goaltending for the Calder, right? The rookie goalies, Askarov and Wahlstedt and Seelovs and Dobish. They're chasing Matthew Schaefer. Like he's running away with this at this point. I think Jesper Wahlstedt has to never lose to have a chance to top Matthew Schaefer for the Calder Trophy. The guy's got 15 points right now. He's a +8. He's playing 23 minutes a game. He's barely 18.
Wahlstedt could not lose this year, and he still wouldn't win.
Yeah,
he doesn't have the backstory, right? Like, he doesn't have what Matthew Schaefer has. Like, nobody expected Matthew Schaefer to make this team, except for Matthew Schaefer. Nobody expected him to be a top guy, except for Matthew Schaefer. Like, the kid has an incredible amount of confidence, and he's been through a lot in his life, and I think that's helped him. And he has a good head on his shoulders. Like, sometimes when you're a really good player, you're not very humble, especially as a teenager, because everything's gone your way, right? Like, you think about some players that have come in this league as really heralded players at 18. And they don't find their way until they're 24, 25, and they've been kicked around a little bit. Matthew's already been kicked around, right, in his personal life and everything that's happened with his mom. We're in the middle of Hockey Fights Cancer Month, and I think everybody knows that story. And I think it's shaped him, and he's humble. And it's hard for an 18-year-old to be accepted into a veteran team, which the Islanders are, and he has been. And to me, that's the biggest testament to him. His on-ice play is great, but the fact that he is worked his way into the league. And you look at him and you're like, he's a rookie?
Yeah.
Like, it's not even a thing anymore. Like, you would almost say, oh, I think that guy should be rookie of the year. And somebody else would look at him and be like, he's not a rookie.
Hey, listen, it took Quinn Hughes until he was 20, 21 to start making that impact. Cale Makar was probably the same way. You look at those two guys, right? They're the class of the young defensemen that have come into this league, right? Hughes and Makar. This kid just barely turned 18, and he's doing what Hughes and Makar were doing at the start of their career, but Hughes and Makar were doing it at 20, 21 years old. He's doing it at 18. So he is so much further ahead than even them. Will he get to the level of consistency and all that? That's the challenge, right, for Matthew Schaefer. I think he will. I think it's a slam dunk. That's the challenge for him, is to get to the level of consistency that guys like Makar and Hughes are at. But he's doing it two, three years before they ever did it.
Yeah, I, like I said, there's almost no words for what he's doing. It's one of the greatest first year stories in a long, long time.
Yeah. So he's the runaway for the Calder Trophy. We got that. We'll agree on that.
I even voted for him, Dan.
You did? That's amazing. Yeah. Good for you. So did I. We got four others that we do, and all our trophy tracker stories are running this week. We have Calder, Vezina, Norris, Jack Adams, and Hart. So we can, you know, let's go to the Vezina. I have for the Vezina Trophy right now Logan Thompson. Logan Thompson currently 9-6-1, 2-1-6 goals against, and a 9-12 save percentage as we talk here on Tuesday. I don't think his team is very good. I really don't. Like, I think they're okay, right? They're not what they were a year ago, without question. He was really good a year ago. I think Logan Thompson has been the best player on that team, on the Capitals. And his numbers for the team that they have right now, and I don't think that they don't play with a ton of pace. They're not generating other, now they've been, you know, they're hit or miss in terms of their offensive generation, but he's just been so steady. That's why I have him there.
Well, so do I. So it's not much of an argument.
You know, by the way, just we did not confer for the listeners. We did not confer on who.
No, and I hate picking with you because it just feels wrong. But the guy I want to talk about here is Spencer Knight.
Yes, he's a good
one. I had him at number three. I had Hellebuck at two, but now Hellebuck's hurt, so I think Spencer's going to move up even higher when we get to the midpoint of the season. He's been fantastic. He, to me, we talk about Bedard, you know, a ton. We talk about Frankie Nazar a little bit and some other guys, but to me, he's the reason the Blackhawks are where they're at. They have a goaltender, which they haven't had since their glory years.
Yeah,
well, I mean they had Marc-Andre Fleury, but for a very short time in a very bad time, and then they kind of moved him along. But they have a franchise goalie again.
Even in their glory years, I don't know that they had a franchise goalie. Corey Crawford was really good, but I don't think he was ever looked at in that light. And Antti Niemi, when was the goalie in 2010, I don't think he was never looked at in that light. Spencer Knight is. And I think the Florida Panthers, Bill Zito knew that, right? I mean, when they traded him, they knew that. But they had Sergei Bobrovsky, and Spencer Knight needed a change of scenery, and they could make that trade confidently, knowing they had a guy who was a multiple-time Vezina Trophy winner, Stanley Cup champion, all of that stuff, the Florida Panthers. We talked about it earlier, right? I mean, the Nashville Predators make the trade. They trade Askarov. They did it confidently because they had UC Saros, but it hasn't worked out for them, right? And whereas Askarov now is shining in San Jose, UC Saros is struggling in Nashville. But Spencer Knight's been a terrific story for the Blackhawks. The Panthers knew that. They knew the goalie he could be. And he had NHL experience before he got to Chicago. And he seemed like the right guy at the right time, right? A team that was starting fresh and a goalie who needed a fresh start. And now you look at him, and he's got a 9.24 save percentage and a 2.38 goals against average, as we talked today. Like, he was number two on my list.
And Zito knew not only the goalie he could be, but what he was going to have to pay him. Right? He would have loved to have kept him, but if he keeps him, there's no Marchand, there's no Jones, there's none of that, right? Because you're going to have to pay your goalie at some point. Look at Bobrovsky, right? So they knew that they couldn't tie up that much money in the goaltending position. And being a GM is about making choices and understanding how you're going to allocate your money and what becomes important to you. And you know, I think if you're a Florida Panthers fan, you can look at Chicago and be like, oh, man. Like, there's our guy when Bobrovsky leaves. And this is going to happen, Dan. The Florida Panthers aren't going to be good at some point.
And the Blackhawks will be.
And fans are going to look and they're going to be like, what if we had kept Knight? Well, if you kept Knight, you probably don't have that second cup.
Yep. No, you do. It's not a probably. You don't have it, right? You don't, because how big of an impact Marchand made, how big of an impact Jones made, right? You don't have it. It's just you can't have it with the way the salary cap works. So they made the right call. At the end of the day, you look at it like you said, oh man, but they made the right call because they got a second banner hanging up in the rafters there because of that.
But I can't wait for that argument, for that conversation. Oh man, if we had only kept Spencer Knight, we would be even bigger dynasty than we already are. Bill Zito's an idiot.
Yeah, right, exactly, right. He's only been the best GM in the league for the last 2 years. All right, so Logan Thompson, we both agree on Spencer Knight. I had him at 2, you had him at 3. Let's go to the Norris. I mean, this one to me is also a slam dunk. It's Cale Makar. The guy's on a 100-point pace right now and the best team in the league.
This podcast is going to be the worst. Of course it's Cale Makar.
That one's easy. Come on. That one's easy. Of course. Guys get 29 points. The team is outstanding. The debate would actually run here. Does he, for a Hart trophy, is like, is Cale Makar splitting votes with Nathan MacKinnon, right? Like, you always have that with McDavid and Draisaitl. Are you going to have that debate here with MacKinnon and Makar too?
I do. You know who's not on my list for MVP?
Makar or MacKinnon?
He neither.
They're not in your top five?
Nope.
See, this is where you lose me, Sean. This is how do you all right, let's go right to the heart. Nathan MacKinnon is leading the National Hockey League in scoring with 37 points right now.
Yep.
His team has one regulation loss. It's had a backup goalie. With all due respect to Scott Wedgwood, who we love because he came on our podcast last week and he was terrific. He has been a career backup goalie. Nathan MacKinnon is driving the offense of this team. Yes, Makar has been terrific too. But I will always go with MacKinnon is the offensive driver on the team. He plays almost 22 minutes per game. So he's not generating his points just on, offensive zone starts and this. He's almost playing 22 minutes a game. He faces the best competition in the league every single night, except for Cale Makar, who is on his team. And he is not in your top five for the most valuable player to his team award?
Nope.
Who is? Can't wait to hear this.
He's the best player in the league. Right? That's what he is.
Some would argue that Connor McDavid is the best player in the league. But
no.
Okay.
I won't.
Maybe not this season.
You seriously think this year that Connor McDavid is the best player in the league?
No, not this season. Absolutely not. Although McDavid, by the way, is third in scoring now, and he's playing over 23 minutes a game. So he's close, but he's not better than Nathan MacKinnon is this season. I don't think he's better than Macklin Celebrini is this season. I don't think he's better than Connor Bedard is this season. I'd argue he's not better than Jack Eichel is this season. Leo Carlson might be better than Connor McDavid is this season. Pasternak.
And that's who I have as number one, is David Pasternak. The Bruins, what are the Bruins besides David Pastrnak and Morgan Geekie and maybe Jeremy Swayman?
Yeah. All right. Fair.
That's a team that's not going to score goals.
Fair.
Like, can you name who the next guy is after those two? Like, it's really hard.
Yeah, I mean, Geeky, by the way, is I think he's got the most goals in the league this year.
He does.
Right?
Yeah. And tune into NHL.com tomorrow because our colleague Emily Benjamin has a fantastic piece on him, as do you on Adam Fox, both setting up the Friday national game
between the Bruins and the Rangers. Showdown.
The Thanksgiving showdown on Friday afternoon. So check out those two features and then tune in your turkey coma and watch what should be a really interesting game between two teams that are not where they expected to be for different reasons.
All right, but still, let's get back to this. David Pastrnak is in my top five. Celebrini's in my top five. Bedard's in my top five.
Yep.
Evgeny Malkin is in my top five this season. Okay? Nathan MacKinnon is my number one.
Okay.
I think it's a runaway.
It is. Not to give it away, but we have 16 votes. 14 of them had MacKinnon as number one. The other two didn't have MacKinnon in the top five. I'm not the only one.
How is that possible?
And I understand that my hill to die on is not everybody else's hill to die on.
Yeah.
The MVP award, the Hart Trophy, has become a best player award. We have that award. The players choose it. It's the Lindsay. It is an MVP award.
It's the most valuable player to his team. The guy leads his team in scoring. He plays the most minutes of any forward on his team, among the most minutes of any forward in the league, all situations, drives the offense of the best team in the league. Most valuable to his team.
Yep.
Says it right there. I wanted to cycle back. All right, so we disagree on that. All right. I wanted to cycle back quickly before we get to the last one, which is Jack Adams. I wanted to cycle back quickly to the Norris. Should Matthew Schaefer get Norris Trophy votes? I think he should.
He didn't get mine, not yet. Did he get yours?
Well, I had him in the top five. Yeah. I do believe I had him in the top five for the Norris. I think he is. I actually had him at number four. I had Makar, Werenski, Quinn Hughes, and Matthew Schaefer, and then Josh Morrissey. I think it seems crazy, right? It does. How can you give the rookie the Norris vote, if you will, and give him that love? But he's just different. He's playing like this is a guy who's playing 23 minutes a game, right? Like he's 18, but he's playing big time minutes. He's not being sheltered in those minutes. He can't be sheltered.
He is being sheltered in those minutes. Go back and look. He's being sheltered in those minutes.
He's not playing a lot of PK.
He's not playing a lot of 5-on-5 against really good competition. They're sheltering him.
Well, then they're doing a really good job of generating offense for this guy to stay on the ice.
There's nothing wrong with sheltering him.
No.
Against the big guns.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with... Why would you want a player to get his teeth kicked in?
But that just goes to show how the Islanders are doing a great job in terms of generating offense because he's playing 23 minutes a game, and if he's being sheltered in 5-on-5 situations against some of the best players and he's still playing 23 minutes a game, the Islanders are doing a great job of generating offense and staying out of their defensive zone.
Yeah. So great, but he's not one of the top five defensemen. He's in the top 10, and he can certainly move into the top five, but right now at the quarter mark of the season, he's not a top five guy to me. I have the same guys you do, and then I have McAvoy before he got hurt.
And hopefully he comes back and is able to get healthy and come back here soon because the Bruins absolutely need him. He's the other guy, by the way, for the Bruins when you talked about, but not in terms of offense, but... all right, last one before we get out of here. Jack Adams Award. Where'd you go?
The Jack Adams. I went, and we did this 2 weeks ago because we had to vote, and then I had to tabulate him, and then we run him. So at the time, it was Dan Muse. They've hit a little bit of a bump, and I don't know if it's him now, but regardless of the fact that they're hovering around a playoff spot, this was a team that was going to be in the lottery. Nobody expected this out of them.
No. So there are five awards that we do. We agree on four of them. and then we completely disagree on one of them. Okay. I have Dan Muse as well. And I think I still would, to be honest with you, today. If we did the vote today, I think I still would, because this was a team that was supposed to be at the bottom of the league. And Dan Muse has given them a strong direction. He's incorporated young players into a system. Yeah, listen, he's got Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin and Chris Letang. That helps. That helps. But you need that. To be a good coach in the league, you need good players on your team. That helps. But even though they've hit a bit of a lull, and they probably are regressing back to the mean a little bit, they've still been way better at this point of the season than anybody thought that they would be. And that's why I went with Dan Muse. And I would still go with him today as they're 21 games into their season. They have 10 wins and 25 points in 21 games. I mean, they are on almost a 100-point pace.
And their defense behind Chris Letang is wow.
And he's playing two rookies in net. He's relying on Shelovs and Mirashev in net right now. That's not easy for a coach. He's a first-time coach. But you can see why, through just a quarter of a season, you can see why he was a very well-liked assistant and why Kyle Dubas went out and hired him as the head coach. I think he's proving so far that he's more than just a developmental guy. Because he's getting more out of this team than we thought was possible. And I would still have him as my guy right now. We'll see where it goes at the midway point, but I would still at this point have Dan Muse.
And you know what else he's done? And I don't know how much of it he's done, because I think Malkin's healthy and I think he's playing healthy. But he has Malkin playing at a level we haven't seen Evgeny Malkin play at in a long time. Clearly, Evgeny Malkin buys into whatever Dan Muse is selling.
Yeah, he buys into wanting a new contract too.
Yeah.
You know, that certainly is a nice, it certainly helps. But you're right. Let's not discount what Dan Muse has done there. I think so. We agree on four, and we completely disagree on the Hart Trophy, but that's the way it goes. All right, we'll take it. This was a lot of fun, Sean. It's Thanksgiving week, and we all know what that means for you, right?
The Christmas salad is getting made tomorrow, Dan.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. All right. Well, you enjoy that. I don't know how, but you should. And this was a lot of fun. Happy Thanksgiving to you. Happy Thanksgiving to the listeners. Big night. Wednesday night in the National Hockey League, nothing Thursday. Right back at it Friday. Afternoon showdown, Rangers and Bruins. Enjoy the hockey.